The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam.
This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
Happy Luis Castillo might be back day, and welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today on Wednesday, June 16th. I am Frank Stample, joined by Scott White. And before we get into everything, because there's a lot, as usual, to talk about, I just want to commend and thank everybody who is here watching us live and listening on demand. We have talked about this a lot recently, but this has truly been the weirdest fantasy season that we have had to traverse, that we have had to navigate to this point. So give yourself a pat on the back for sticking with it and not just giving in on fantasy baseball this season. Scott, I am ready to crush the comp. Are you ready?
Crush the comp? Like yes. The comparison?
No, the competition, Scott.
Oh. Comp. I've never heard that before. I've heard comp is short for compensation. For comp is short. What did I just say? Comp is short for comparison.
Composition, I think you just said. Is that what you said? I don't know.
Yeah, I've heard that too. But never competition.
Corporate Scott comp for
compensation. It's like sausage and pep pizza. What's the pep? Is it pepperoni? Is it peppers? Is it Pepsi?
Who calls pizza sausage and pep?
Isn't that a thing? A sausage and pep pizza?
I don't know, Scott. I live in New York and I've eaten a lot of pizza in my life.
I thought it was a New York thing.
I've never heard of sausage and pep.
Sausage and pep. Yeah. Sauce and pep. If you shortened it to sauce and pep, that'd be really confusing. You're talking about tomato sauce? You're talking about sausage.
Since we've already wasted this much time, Scott, if you order a regular slice of pizza or a cheese slice of pizza, what would you ask for? Would you ask for regular or cheese?
Cheese.
No, it's a regular slice of pizza. It's normal. It's plain. It's regular.
Plain.
Yeah, that's one of the age-old arguments here in New York. It's regular. It's not a cheese pizza. Anyway, today on the pod, we're going to play a little trade matchmaker. The Excitometer is back for some notable starting pitcher standouts. Recap the rest of Tuesday's action. We're not going to talk about Tyler Glass now as much because we did do an emergency podcast that you can check out on demand. But let's start with more of the latest on foreign substances, which frankly, I've had it up to here, Scott. I've had it up to here with talking about foreign substances, but I feel like whenever there's an update, we do have to update the people. But I've had it. I've had it with this stuff.
Oh, there's a lot more to go, Frank, so don't get tired of it yet.
I know. And that's why this has been...
It's just beginning. This is just the beginning of the conversation that's going to go on for months and months and months and years, maybe. Maybe the rest of our lives.
The rest of our lives. All right, so let's get to it. MLB confirmed they will start cracking down on the use of foreign substances for pitchers starting Monday, June 21st, which we brought up yesterday, but we didn't actually have confirmation from the MLB. We now have that. This will include umpires regularly checking pitchers throughout the course of the game. Any pitcher caught with a substance will be ejected from the game immediately and suspended for 10 games with pay. Pitchers can continue to use rosin, but can no longer use it in conjunction with sunscreen, which leads me to believe we're going to see some really wacky suntans for starting pitchers, Scott.
Some burns.
Seriously. It's going to be, what are they going to use instead? Like some kind of spray on something? I don't know what's going to happen there. But anyway, they can't like just have a glob of suntan lotion somewhere and mix it with rosin. That's one of the substances they cannot use. And also of note, teams will not be able to replace suspended players on their roster, which I thought was interesting. So if someone gets suspended, you're down to a 25-man roster. It doesn't remain a 26-man roster. You just have to play at that disadvantage. As for what this means for, I guess, the landscape, we spoke about yesterday how it will likely lead to offense being up and pitching taking a step back, which I think is the most obvious. But in terms of control and hit by pitches, we're currently on pace for the most hit by pitches in a season ever, all time. And the MLB is hoping that as a result of not having that extra grip from said substances, pitchers will try and tone it down with the max effort velocity that they're constantly throwing with, which will lead to improved control. That is an assumption by MLB. I don't know that that is actually going to happen from players in the league, but that is what they think is going to happen. And I don't want to spend too much time on like the ethics side of things here, Scott. You know, who's right, who's wrong, yada, yada, yada. But this does seem eerily similar to how MLB basically turned a blind eye to PEDs for as long as they did. And then once it wasn't convenient for them, they decided to turn it around on the players, which is basically what we're going through right now. Like, so many pitchers have said this has been in the game for a long time, dating back to however the earliest days of baseball, right? I'm sure they didn't have spider tack back then, but they had something,
right?
But it's every time MLB comes across a scandal like this, it just seems like the way that they handle it is just embarrassing, that they kind of turn it back on the players. And obviously Trevor Bauer went off on a rant about it and so on and so forth. You can go follow it up on Twitter. So before we get into a little bit of glass now here, Scott, do you have any thoughts ultimately on this entire situation, what the policy entails, and MLB being dirty, rotten scoundrels with the way that they handle this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it strikes me as a little more egregious is their turnaround on PEDs, because this wasn't even really a secret that this was going on. And yeah, there were a lot of suspicions about the PEDs 20 years ago, a lot of assumptions made, but like everybody knew this was going on and had been going on for a long time. And even things as commonplace as sunscreen and rosin being suddenly off the table too. Like, you know, there's a rosin bag provided on the mound. You're wearing sunscreen. It's almost like, how do you avoid doing it? You know? And I worry about the stigma. We talked about it yesterday and it was brought up more on Twitter today. Rachel Luba, who is Trevor Bauer's agent, was kind of trying to get out ahead of the stigma, which was not a great look.
Trevor Bauer is not going to be a Hall of Famer. So maybe you're looking out for other players, but I'm just going to tell you right now, Trevor Bauer will not be a Hall of Famer.
Well,
continue, Scott.
I wouldn't assume that, but fair enough. He's has a long way to go for sure. But yeah, she was kind of getting out ahead of that. And, you know, I was just looking in some of the mentions and people were getting riled up about it the same way they do about PEDs. And I'm like, oh geez, something that's going to come into play every Hall of Fame vote from now on. Cause I just don't like this thought of that. And, you know, as we talked about yesterday, I wonder if 10 games is going to be enough of a deterrent. It's interesting that, as you mentioned, they can't replace a player. So maybe if one guy goes down, everybody's like, all right, don't do any of this for a while. But really the most novel thought I had today about this was brought up by Tyler Glasnow. We did an emergency pod once it was revealed that Tyler Glasnow had a partial tear of his UCL and he's not going to have Tommy John surgery yet. He's going to try and rehabilitate it, but I think we all know where that's headed. But what we didn't mention in that podcast is that he blames the sudden removal of these substances from the field of play for the injury, because all of a sudden the way the ball comes out of your hand is different and you're trying to compensate for that. And any time you're changing the way you deliver the baseball, that opens the door to injury. So he fully blames that on his injury. And we saw Tucker Davidson get removed today with a forearm issue himself. His velocity was down prior to that. It seems like it might be a serious injury. You know, he hasn't come out and blamed it, but you know, it makes me wonder now, every time a pitcher's removed from an injury, could it have had an impact?
Yeah. I think that's fair. And something else that I thought about, Scott, is if we start to see velocity toned down a little bit for the reasons that MLB mentioned, right, that they assume players are not going to try and throw as hard because they don't have this grip, the same grip that they've had for the past couple of seasons. Every time we see velocity down, we're going to have to wonder, well, okay, is this a reaction to that, or is it something where this player is actually hurt or they're pitching through something? So I think that's going to be an added level of analysis that we're going to have to work in terms of velocity. But I actually agreed with what Trevor Bauer had to say regarding this, is that it is pretty weird to just like change a rule mid-season. It would be like doing that in your fantasy league, which we constantly tell people don't do that, I guess, unless it's something that's really egregious and there's a unanimous vote within your league. But it is pretty crazy for baseball to just come out and change this mid-season. You know, maybe they do it in the offseason and pitchers can learn how to throw without it. But Tyler Glass, now you mentioned, Scott, placed on the IL, partially torn UCL, blamed not having substances. He basically went cold turkey a couple of starts ago, stopped using them, and he was trying to overcompensate for not having them. And that's what led to this injury, or so he says. You can listen to that, the emergency podcast, but ultimately, Scott, you said that you were going to drop him outside of your top 60 starting pitchers. I have updated my rankings. I put him down to SP62 as of now. Does that mean that you are still holding on to Glass now, I guess, with the slight hope that he returns this season?
Yeah, that basically sums it up. I'm not expecting him to return this season, but he hasn't been ruled out, and the impact potential is so high that you really don't want to just drop him before you have to, if you can help it. So my goal is to move him down as far in my rankings, like behind all the other pitchers that I wouldn't consider dropping, just kind of putting him at the back end of that group. So yeah, the 65 to 70 range is probably where he'll wind up for me.
Yeah, I think I probably have to drop him even lower than, based on, because I agree with what you just said, and Dallas Keuchel has looked really good now for 2-3-ish starts in a row. So I think I'd rather have Keuchel. Logan Gilbert has looked good recently. Kyle Gibson has been great all season. Frankie Montas just had a really good start, which we will talk about. So I think I probably need to move Glass now behind those names as well. Of course, Shane Bieber went on the IL on Monday. Max Scherzer went on the IL on Tuesday. It's expected to be a minimal stay for him. But if you are hurting for starting pitching because you had one or multiple of these pitchers on your team, we spoke about some of these options, waiver wire options, but Logan Gilbert, Tarek Skubal, Austin Gomber, Mike Minor was pretty meh on Tuesday, but he's still been pretty good over his last 7 starts overall. And if you're in a deeper league, Vladimir Gutierrez is a name that you can look at as well. But let's get into Tuesday and talk about actual baseball, Scott.
Oh my goodness gracious.
All right, so where would you like to begin here today, Scotty?
I would like to begin with one of the most available players you'll ever hear us talk about, no, my goodness gracious. And that is Bobby Bradley, Bobbo of the Cleveland Indians, their new first baseman, now that Jake Bowers has moved to greener pastures. So Bobby Bradley hit a home run today. There was a lot of hang time on this home run. It was like a Dan Straczynski punt. There was a lot of hang time. It was impressive in that way. But Bobby Bradley, we already know to have impressive power. He is a guy who has had, I think, multiple 30 homer seasons in the minors, and the minor league season is so short and so few pitches are in the strike zone that that's hard to do. It's hard. You don't see many 30 homer seasons in the minors at all. Okay. So he had a 33 homer season, a 27 homer season, a 29 homer season, another 27 homer season, a lot of home runs for Bobby Bradley. Unfortunately, the strikeout rate has also been very high. It's why, for instance, he was hitting 196 at AAA prior to this promotion. So is there any reason to be excited about him then? Maybe. Depends how deep your league is. I'm not ruling out Bobby Bradley being better in the majors than he ever was in the minors. Because you look at what he was doing in spring training, when it clearly wasn't an open competition between him and Jake Bowers, you know, there were minor league options coming into play with that decision. Bobby Bradley was very productive this spring, and he only struck out 6 times in 27 at-bats. I look at that, you know, where he seemed like a changed player. All the reports were glowing about him, all these changes he had made. you know, specifically with an idea, with an eye on making more contact. I'm sorry, it was actually 7 strikeouts and 33 bats. But anyway, I wonder if it was a situation where he thought he won the job. He gets sent down. He's kind of coasting, going through the motions because he's not happy with what happened. And Terry Francona actually referred to it as a bitter pill for him to swallow, for Bradley to swallow. And now he comes up in the majors. And so far, in addition to having 3 home runs now in 25 at-bats, he's struck out only 4 times in 25 at-bats. So spring training and regular season so far, you know, we're talking about, how many at-bats is it? 60 at-bats, where he's been a much, much better contact hitter than he ever was in the minors. This is me kind of begging for an answer, begging for the scenario that I want to happen, you know, kind of straining credibility. I understand that, but stranger things have happened. So I'm hopeful that Bobby Bradley, with all that power, makes enough contact that he can be a fantasy asset. I think in 15 teams or deeper, worth taking a flyer, seeing where it goes. But obviously, it's a long shot.
Bobby Bradley is 24% rostered, and we all know that Cleveland can use help in their lineup. They have Jose Ramirez, Amed Rosario, who I'm going to talk about a lot today because I really like what I've seen from him. They're fine. Eddie Rosario is coming around too, but you know, outside of, you know, 3 hitters in their lineup, they really, really do need help. So Bobby Bradley is providing that as of now. He's making a lot of contact, big power, 4 seasons with 27 plus home runs in the minor leagues. I read a really cool feature about him on The Athletic in the offseason where for years he would change his diet every offseason, and one year he would come in shedding a bunch of weight, and then his power would be down. The next year he would put on a bunch of muscle, and then he would strike out because he wasn't like flexible enough. And he was talking about how he had his best offseason ever as a professional baseball player this offseason. So maybe it's nothing, but I thought it was actually a really cool story. I forgot who wrote it. I'd like to give credit to them, but if you search it up on The Athletic, you will be able to find it. So I'm actually with you there, Scott. I think in deeper leagues, if you do need some pop, Bobby Bradley is going to have an opportunity here to play for Cleveland. And my oh my goodness gracious player, Scott, I would like to highlight 1, Taijuan Walker. And while we're at it, I owe him a formal apology because last week I said, trade this guy for Cracker Jacks, anything that you can get your hands on. Heck, even if you can get Alex Kirilloff, go ahead, go do it, man. He's not worth anything. And then Taijuan Walker just goes out against the Cubs, 7 innings, 2 runs, a career-high 12 strikeouts on Tuesday, 14 swinging strikes on 92 pitches. And what I really like about what he's done recently, 1 walk or less in 6 of his last 8 starts. So overall, the walks per 9 still look very inflated because he's had some starts where the walks have really gotten out of control. But 6 out of his last 8 with 1 walk or less, that's really, really encouraging, Scott. And I don't know that he's ever going to be a plus strikeout contributor like he was in this start. But if he can be Kyle Hendricks-esque, which is someone you might have actually compared him to, then I think that there's actually something there with Taijuan Walker. So I apologize to him. Back-to-back 7-inning starts here. He's got a 2.12 ERA on the season. I don't think he's going to keep that up, Scott, but Walker has been very good this season for the Mets.
Yeah, I mean, he's clearly thriving on weak contact. You mentioned the walk rate. For the season's bad, hopefully this recent stretch, that's going to improve. But the walk rate is bad. The whiff rate is bad. The ground ball rate is bad. The strikeout rate is merely decent. So clearly he's thriving on weak contact. That's the only explanation. The xFIP is actually not so bad considering 383. The xERA is actually lower. It's like 330-ish.
Which works
212,
which works into him generating weak contact.
Right. xERA would measure that more than xFIP would. Yep. And the reason I favor xFIP to xERA is because I don't generally buy that pitchers have a ton of control over that, especially from year to year, but even within a season. I don't think it's especially predictive unless they have an extended track record of it. And Taijuan Walker does have a history of outperforming his xFIP consistently. So, you know, obviously he's not going to be a 212 ERA guy overall all year. I would suspect from this point forward, maybe a mid-3s ERA. But enough strikeouts, enough innings that he's going to be pretty usable. I would be reluctant to move him unless somebody was willing to pay up for that ERA.
I still think that he's going to regress at some point. I don't know how much that's going to be. So again, this is a sell high situation. And we're going to talk about a bunch of hitters later on when we do this trade matchmaker segment that hopefully doesn't bomb. It's something new. I think it's going to work out, Scott. But there are a lot of hitters available now that have got off to slow starts that you can acquire for cheaper than they were drafted for entering the season. Before we hit the news and notes, this Saturday on CBS, an afternoon of sports begins at 1 Eastern with the Bill Pickett Invitational Rodeo Showdown, followed by WNBA Summer Hoops at 4 Eastern. Head to the field for the NWSL, then in primetime at 8 Eastern. The green flag is out for Superstars Saturday night and race number 2 of the Camping World SRX Series on the dirt track at Knoxville Fairgrounds in Iowa. A jam-packed day of sports this Saturday on CBS. The news and notes from Tuesday, we had a couple of prospect promotions, and boy, did I whiff on yesterday's podcast, man. It was basically, I was Miguel Sano at the plate on this podcast in terms of what I said about prospects, because I said, well, Jesus Sanchez is slowing down in June. I don't know what's going on there. Matt Manning, ha, no way he's going to get called up. Both of them... are going to have either been called up or are going to be called up this week. So let's start with Jesus Sanchez. Corey Dickerson was placed on the IL. Jesus Sanchez at AAA was batting .349 overall with 9 home runs. He has slowed down in the month of June, but Scott, he is 31% rostered. Where, if anywhere, does Jesus Sanchez need to be added?
5 outfielder leagues for sure. Whether it's 15 team, 12 team, possibly even a 10 team. If it's 5 outfield spots you need to fill, I think Jesus Sanchez is worth a flyer. I think it's reasonable to be pessimistic about the performance of any prospect call-up at this point, given the way they've gone since the start of last season. You know, some have been pretty good, but the majority have not. So you need to definitely change your expectations for them as a general rule, which is why I'm not suggesting you call up Jesus Sanchez across the board, even though he was batting .349 with a .1043 OPS at AAA this year. Certainly if he gets off to a good start with the Marlins, catches fire, then I'm going to start recommending him in three outfielder leagues as well. But I assume in those three outfielder leagues you're really sweating every ad drop, and you need to make sure the ads count. So I'm not ready to go there yet for Sanchez in three outfielder leagues, especially since, as you pointed out, Frank, he had been slowing down at AAA, .233 with a .670 OPS in his past 19 games.
In his debut, it's not his MLB debut, but his season debut on Tuesday, he went 0-for-4 with 2 strikeouts, and he was up against a lefty in Kwanghyun Kim. So I agree with that. I think 5 outfielder leagues, you can add him for now, but anything shallower, we're going to play a little wait and see on Jesus Sanchez. Matt Manning was the other one who will be called up after the Tigers place Matthew Boyd on the IL. And the reason I was so pessimistic about the possibility of him getting the call is because Matt Manning had an ERA over 8 at AAA. He's 26% rostered on CBS right now. And I don't know if this is just out of necessity because they have nobody else that they can go to, but he was allowing a ton of home runs this year, Scott. And based on what we've seen from other prospects, I don't know. I really don't know what we're going to get from Matt Manning. So where do you need to add him, if anywhere?
Yeah, watch him be the pitcher who dominates right out of the gate when Jackson Kowar and Daniel Lynch, Logan Gilbert, none of them did. Yeah, I mean, Matt Manning, he was the higher prospect. I was probably about there with Gilbert coming into the season. Consensus top 50 prospect, very steady minor league track record, actually. So to see him struggle so much at AAA is very confusing. Now, 6 of the 11 home runs he allowed came in his first 2 starts. But even so, the 5 starts that came after, he actually had a higher ERA, 8.86 during that stretch. So I guess the one glimmer of hope here is that his most recent start, which was a week ago at this point, 2 earned runs in 6 innings with 8 strikeouts, 2 walks.
That's pretty good.
So maybe he's on the right track. But, you know, he had a similar start 3 turns before that. So, actually 3 of his 7 starts were quality starts. You know, I didn't hear any reports about that latest start specifically. I haven't heard much to explain why he's struggled at AAA, but honestly, it's such a departure from the rest of his career that I was fearful a report would come out that Matt Manning was dealing with an injury of some kind. That's how bad it's been. Clearly that hasn't happened, and the fact he's getting the call would suggest that if he is hurt, they don't know about it. But yeah, I'm not considering Matt Manning a high priority ad right now. 15 teams or deeper, fine. If you just happen to have a roster spot to burn for some reason, it never hurts to take a chance on upside, but I'm betting against him making an immediate impact.
Yeah, I mean, if you play in a league where you have unlimited IL spots, which I kind of think we're getting to that point, just throw all your hurt players on there and you have an open roster spot, then take a shot on Matt Manning and see what happens. It's worth mentioning that last year he actually was dealing with some arm trouble in his pitching arm. So, you know, just throwing it out there because he was pitching so badly. But we will see him this Thursday. It's actually a pretty fun game, him going up against Shohei Ohtani and the Angels. Max Scherzer was placed in the IL with that groin inflammation, but is expected to be a minimal stay for him. The nightmare season continues for Cody Bellinger, who was placed on the IL retroactive to June 12th. This might just be a short stay as well, but left hamstring tightness is what he's dealing with there. If you were using Bellinger in the outfield, and you need someone there, 50% rostered or less. Amed Rosario, Miguel Andujar, Jock Peterson, Odubel Herrera were some names that stood out to me. If you need a first baseman who is rostered in less than 70% of leagues, Joey Votto, who we just spoke about yesterday, Jonathan Scope has first base eligibility. He hit his 11th home run of the season on Tuesday. And Patrick Wisdom, who has been hot for the, well, not recently, but overall, he's been pretty good for the Chicago Cubs. Adalberto Mondesi was reinstated, but did not start on Tuesday, which is something that always confuses me. I don't know exactly why teams do that, but please stay healthy, Adalberto Mondesi. We are begging you. Luis Severino suffered a grade 2 groin strain during his rehab stint over the weekend. The Yankees were hoping to have him back by the end of June, but the groin injury will delay his return by about a month, according to Aaron Boone. So maybe late July, early August for Severino. Bryce Harper was removed from Tuesday's action with an apparent injury. Ronald Acuna returned to the lineup on Tuesday. Chris Bryant left after getting hit by a pitch on his right hand. X-rays came back negative. Anthony Rendon will be out for a couple of days. He hurt his triceps late on Monday night. Tucker Davidson, Scott, which you mentioned, left his start with forearm tightness and will be placed on the IL. That sucks, especially for those who started him in a weekly league and were expecting two starts. Boom, this guy. I was one of those. Steven Strasburg's recent visit with a neck specialist didn't lead to anything concrete, but he's scheduled for another visit. Well, good luck, Steven Strasburg. Javier Baez returned to the lineup with his 15th home run of the season. Adbert Alzolay threw a bullpen and may be ready for activation after one more session. Colton Wong will likely be activated during the upcoming series against the Rockies. Jamer Candelario was reinstated Tuesday. Tommy Edman was scratched due to a tight torso. The Tigers designated Wilson Ramos for assignment, so if you added Eric Haas, looks like he will be sticking around as their starting catcher. He actually plays a little bit of outfield, too, so that helps with his playing time.
Remember like in week two when Wilson Ramos was leading the majors in home runs?
Yeah, and I think it was like hard hit rate and exit velocity and all this stuff. And gosh.
That fell apart.
That was a long time ago. A few prospect updates for you. Jared Kelnick added another sock and a shoe on Monday. Yeah. That's now
sock and a shoe.
Two games in a row with a home run.
Catching on, sock and a shoe.
It's catching on. I saw people talking about it on Twitter. That's now two games in a row with a home run and a stolen base at AAA for Jared Kelnick. So build that confidence up, you know, a couple of weeks. Maybe we see you by the end of June, early July, maybe right after the All-Star break, something like that. I agree with Scott. I think you should be holding on to Jared Kelnick. And Yankees pitching prospect Luis Gill was promoted to AAA. He had a 2.64 ERA and a 1.21 whip with 50 strikeouts over 30 and two-thirds innings pitched. So gets a lot of strikeouts, lots of whiffs, but also walks a lot of batters as well. The name there is Luis Gill. We're going to take a quick break, but when we return, we're going to play trade matchmaker. Should you be selling high on these starting pitchers for some buy low hitters? We'll talk about it next here on Fantasy Baseball Today.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
So, Scott, I originally got this idea for the segment because I saw a tweet from Ron Chandler, who is one of the most respected, smartest fantasy baseball minds ever in the entire industry. Don't really think there's any disputing that. But he tweeted out, "Starting Monday, our fantasy standings are going to start shifting. Next winter's stat splits are going to have to be, quote, before 6/21, before June 21st, and 6/21 and after." So he thinks that there is going to be a dramatic shift in the environment based on that tweet, where offense is going to take off here. And we've already seen it since highlighted yesterday. I think it was June 3rd and beyond. Offense is up quite a bit. And he thinks it might jump even more after Monday, which is when they're going to start cracking down on these foreign substances. Scott, do you think that it will be as drastic as a shift here in favor of offense?
I can't say with real confidence. I mean, I think offense is going to improve. To what extent? It could be huge. It could be huge, but I don't think it would just be because of the crackdown on substances. That'll help. That'll be part of it. But there's also everything else we've talked about. Pitching attrition, I think, is going to become a problem. It's already been a problem, of course, record number of IL stints already. But I think that's only going to increase as the innings begin to pile up. Now that we're past the end point from last year, I think we're going to see more and more pitchers go on the IL. And, you know, it's we're already expecting some, even before this sticky stuff came into the discussion, we were already expecting offense to increase just because, you know, April numbers were, the season-long numbers were dragged down so much by an unseasonably cold April, where the league-wide BABIP was just absurdly low, and May was more typical, and you know, if it followed the usual trends, it would get better and better as the temperature warmed up, offense would. So we were already expecting that, and then we got these other things here now dragging down the pitching pool, making that weaker. So, I mean, the high watermark is 2019 for offense, and I wouldn't rule it out. I think it's definitely going to be different from April and May. Is it going to be more like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's going to be as drastic as 2019, but I would be, as we've said several times on this podcast, I would be nervous about moving any starting pitching right now.
All right. So then maybe I should just scrap this entire segment. It's because it's sell high on starting pitchers for buy low hitters, but someone still might have depth out there. So let's talk about it. I thought the point that you made about attrition is probably the biggest one to take away there, because it's a good point. And the fact that all these ace starting pitchers are going down, that means people are stepping in who are not nearly as good. So I don't think that we're going to see power bounce back to the level that it was back in 2019. But I think in terms of batting average, OBP, maybe some extra base hits, some doubles, triples, I do think those are going to be on the rise here. So what I'm going to do, Scott, is I'm going to give you a group of pitchers and then a group of hitters. And you're going to tell me what a realistic trade is. And if you don't want to trade any of these starting pitchers, if you just want to hold on to all of them, I don't have a problem with that. Just feel free to tell me. So the first group that we have here is Kevin Gausman, Carlos Rodon, and Zach Wheeler, All three of those pitchers rank inside the top six starting pitchers in fantasy points per game right now. And the hitters that I thought maybe you can acquire for these pitchers included Freddie Freeman, Bryce Harper, or Trevor Story. Do you think any of those trades are realistic? Would you want to try and offer any of them?
I think all of those trades are realistic. I think Freddie Freeman is the one I'd be most eager to trade for of those three, especially now Harper's dealing with a back issue. We don't know the severity of that. But I also think Story's going to bounce back in a pretty major way. I would say that Carlos Rodon is the one I'd be most likely to shop for. Yeah, I think I'd probably trade Rodon for Freeman or Story, unless like I felt like I would be putting my pitching staff in dire straits with that move. But if I'm trading from excess, I think that's okay. We've talked before about Rodon, first full year back from Tommy John surgery. Stands to reason he's not going to be able to accumulate as many innings as the average pitcher. And that could become an issue in the second half. So yeah, I'd be fine with any of those, either of those deals.
The second group that I have here is Julio Urias, Trevor Rogers, and Freddie Peralta. All three of those currently rank inside the top 20 in terms of fantasy points per game. And I think specifically with Rogers and Peralta, they're going to be on innings limits at some point. Probably could say the same thing for Julio Urias. Trevor Rogers pitched on Tuesday, and he was at the Cardinals, 6 innings, 1 run, 6 strikeouts. He has allowed 3 earned runs or less in every start this season. It's his 4th straight quality start. So for that group, Scott, do you think you can get the Seager, Machado, I'll even throw in like Christian Yelich into that group? Or is it more realistic to try for like Jose Abreu, Anthony Rendon, or DJ LeMahieu? What do you think?
So would I trade Julio Urias, Trevor Rogers, or Freddie Peralta for Seager or Machado or Yelich? Again, probably not for Seager. Machado would be hard to turn down, I think, in any of those scenarios. Yelich is such a big question mark right now. I'm not necessarily opposed to it, but again, it would have to be needs-based.
Okay, so you think Urias, Rogers, and Peralta are worth more than Jose Abreu, Anthony Rendon, and DJ LeMahieu right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. The reason I bring it up is because I have a hard time myself comparing the value of pitchers versus hitters. Sometimes I feel like maybe I bring up trades that are not realistic or something. So that's why you got to keep me in check here, Scott. That's what we do. So I'll bring up stuff and you tell me if it's realistic or not. This third group is Aaron Civale and Marcus Stroman, who Civale is currently 9th in fantasy points per game. I think a lot of that is driven by wins. And then Marcus Stroman is 26th in fantasy points per game. So for Civale or Stroman, how about you tell me what level of hitter you think I can get? Is it Abreu, Rendon, LeMahieu, or is it maybe the next group below them? I'm looking at Paul Goldschmidt, Eddie Rosario, Michael Conforto, who's expected to return soon.
Ugh, definitely not that group. No, that's you've crossed the threshold from hitters I trust to hitters I don't trust.
All right. That's good. That's why we're doing this.
Point. Yeah. I think you need to aim higher. So what would be a good target?
Would you do it for LeMahieu, Scott, who he currently has multiple hits in 5 of his last 6 games. So showing signs of life.
Yeah. See, this is the difficulty in them constantly changing the environment on you, because we started to get used to one thing with hitters and now it's about to change again. And we don't know to what extent. Ron Chandler thinks it's going to be to a major extent. And maybe DJ LeMahieu lives up to a second round price tag after all. I don't know, but he was one of the players that we were most concerned about the deadened ball impacting him. I think at least in terms of power production, that's still on the table as a possible outcome. And I don't have a ton of confidence that at this point that DJ LeMahieu is going to be more than a fringy mixed leaguer. I don't. I'm hopeful in the leagues where I still have him. I certainly wouldn't want to sell low on him. But I can't see myself buying low on him either.
All right, so that was for Aaron Civale and Marcus Stroman. So maybe aim higher. I mean, look, it doesn't hurt to aim higher. What's the worst thing that people could say? No? And maybe they get mad at you? don't ever send me trade offer again. So try it anyway. Who cares? I've had so many people tell me that in my life anyway. This final group's got Kyle Gibson and Anthony DeSclafani. Kyle Gibson now has a quality start in 11 of 13 starts after Tuesday. Six innings, one run against the Houston Astros. I don't really know how he's doing it right now. His home run suppression has been really impressive, 7.6%. Home run to fly ball ratio, that's 14% for his career. That's Kyle Gibson. And then Anthony DeSclafani is coming off of a complete game where he was obviously very good. So maybe this is the group where you target like a Paul Goldschmidt or an Eddie Rosario, even though you don't really trust those guys much.
Maybe, yeah. I don't trust half the hitter pool right now, so it's difficult for me to say, oh yeah, that one's okay. Let's see if I pull open.
But at the same time, right. Scott, you probably don't trust Kyle Gibson or Anthony DeSclafani to continue doing what they've done. I don't trust
DeSclafani.
Yeah.
I don't. I have a little more faith in Gibson.
Okay.
So let me look at outfield here, since this is obviously a deep hitter position. So like a Jared Walsh or a Trey Mancini, even Mitch Haniger, who it sounds like is going to be back in the lineup tomorrow. We were worried about him having that deep bone bruise in his knee. Teoscar Hernandez, Alex Verdugo. This is kind of getting toward the end of the hitters I trust. Michael Brantley. I still like Lourdes Gurriel a lot, and he's kind of a buy low. So I would do like DeSclafani for Gurriel for sure.
I think that's probably a realistic trade.
He's kind of a boring hitter who I think people dismiss him because he's boring, but I think he's actually pretty good as Brian Reynolds. I think he's very attainable. Would I give up Gibson for him? Depends what my need is, I guess. If I'm thinking hitting is about to get better and pitching is about to get worse, you know, it'd have to be a scenario where Gibson is like my number eight starter, you know,
which
in terms of trust level, not performance today. Performance to date, he's probably higher than your number eight starter.
Which I think could be realistic, right?
Yeah.
Nobody was really touting Kyle Gibson coming into the season. And he's throwing this cutter. We've talked about it a lot this season, which maybe that's helped with his home run suppression. But yeah, I think if you play in a deeper league, these are all hitters that were drafted inside of the top 150 and they haven't performed. Eugenio Suarez, Kevin Biggio, Brandon Lau, Alec Bohm. Kirilloff wasn't drafted inside the top 150, but his expected numbers are still really good. So I'll just throw that name out there one more time. Jeff McNeil is expected to return soon for the Mets. So there's another name for you. The Excitometer, Scott. We debuted the Excitometer kind of randomly last week, but I'm going to bring up some notable starting pitchers from Tuesday. And 1 to 10, you tell me how excited you are based on the start that they had. And we'll start with Luis Castillo, who might be back. He was at the Brewers, 7 shutout. We had 7 strikeouts to 3 walks. He had 18 swinging strikes on 109 pitches. And over his last 3 starts, he has a 1.98 ERA, Scott. The Excite-O-Meter, Luis Castillo.
I would probably put it at an 8.
Yeah.
Pretty excited. Definitely trending the right way. This was the first week in the leagues where I had him that I entrusted him with a lineup spot again, put him back in my lineup. And obviously that's gone well so far. He has a second start coming up this week. But the velocity's been going up. The swinging strikes have been going up. The walks have been coming down. And of course, the quality of contact's been coming down too. It just looks like a different pitcher all of a sudden. You know, he hasn't had like a huge strikeout performance yet that would really punctuate this return to form. So I'm waiting for that. But otherwise, he's looked pretty solid and is back in the circle of trust, I would say.
It is worth mentioning that he's currently on pace to face the Atlanta Braves at home next week. So in Great American Ballpark, I don't really love that spot all that much, but
let's see how his next start goes. If he's good again next time out, I'd probably be okay with it.
All right. How about Patrick Corbin, who was up against the Pirates on Tuesday, and it was the furthest he has gone in a start since May 25th of 2019. He goes 8 1/3, 1 earned run, 7 strikeouts to just 1 walk. He had 14 swinging strikes, and he threw 43 sliders, which is his second most all season. Scott, Patrick Corbin, the Excite-O-Meter.
Well, second most all season, you're talking a raw count, not a percentage, right?
Yes.
The fact he threw 110 pitches probably contributes to that, because he's made his slider his prominent pitch again for the past several turns. And really, velocity hasn't been an issue in a while. How many whiffs he's been getting on a slider, that hasn't been an issue in a while. So, you know, kind of those red flags that we saw for him last year have been gone for a while now, and yet the results weren't there. It was against Pittsburgh this start, but it was a really good start. I would say on the excitometer, it's probably only like a 4, because need to see a few more starts like this before I'm entrusting a lineup spot to him, but it's not nothing.
How about Dallas Keuchel, who was up against the Tampa Bay Rays? 7 shutout with 5 strikeouts, only 1 walk. He had 12 swinging strikes on 102 pitches, and he threw 38 cutters in this start, and now that's 2 straight where he is using the cutter more, and that was his main pitch last season when Dallas Keuchel was awesome. This is also 3 straight quality starts as well, Scott. So Dallas Keuchel, the excitometer.
Well, you can only get so excited about Dallas Keuchel, right? So I'll say 6.5 for Dallas Keuchel. Yeah, the cutter usage, I think, is a big deal. He's certainly looked more effective since increasing it. He was coming off 19 whiffs in his previous start, had 12 in this one, which would also be one of his highest totals for the season. And hopefully he's going to get back to being a quality start machine here. I'm pretty optimistic about that.
Yeah, I'm actually pretty excited about Dallas Keuchel now, too. It's, again, you know, you limit your excitement on Dallas Keuchel because you don't want to get let down. But he's pitching very well, again, getting that cutter involved. Next up, we have Frankie Montas, 7 innings, 2 runs, 8 strikeouts against the Angels. That is 2 straight quality starts for him. He had 16 swinging strikes on 98 pitches, and 9 of those came on the splitter, which was his best pitch back in 2019, Scott. So the excitometer for Frankie Montas.
Yeah, and I noticed, I think for a second straight start, the spin rate on his splitter was down like 300 RPM, which isn't a bad thing. I mean, that's a pitch that you want to drop. You want it to have that tumble. Clearly, it was effective in this start. The whiff rate was off the charts on that splitter in this start. So I'm probably about a 7 on the excitometer for Frankie Montas. I want to see here. So don't have the stats for this latest start, 2 runs in 7 innings in here, but over his past 10 starts, his ERA is below 350. Frankie Montas, and with a pretty good whiff rate. Yeah, I would say, just judging by his season-long numbers, which the ERA is still over 4 because of some couple of really rough starts in April, I think he might be somebody to target in a trade right now. You know, it, just in terms of, so like, in a points league, where you're really cognizant of the wins and losses that your starting pitchers are getting, as well as Frankie Montas has pitched recently. He's only 2-5 in his past, 2-4 in his past 6 starts. So the experience of rostering Frankie Montas may not, even with him, you know, pitching better of late, it may not be all that rewarding. So the ERA being high, the win-loss record being kind of skewed, I think it adds up to Frankie Montas being a buy-low target right now, because what I've seen with this splitter, particularly in his most recent starts, is pretty encouraging.
Specifically on the splitter, his CSW percentage, which is called strikes plus whiffs, was 46% on Tuesday. Mind you, league average for all pitches is 28%. So, I mean, anything over 30 is like pretty good. Anything over 35 is like really good. Anything over 40 is awesome. It was 46% CSW for Frankie Montas' splitter on Tuesday. So that pitch was really working for him. I agree. I think if you can acquire him right now, something I would look into doing. And I'll just wrap up this excitometer with Shane McClanahan, who was not very good at the White Sox on Tuesday. 5 innings, 7 hits, 3 runs, 2 of those were earned. But he had 16 swinging strikes on 89 pitches. That was a season high in pitches, and he threw 4 different pitches at least 11 times, including a season-high 22 curveballs. His previous season high was 11. So over his last three starts, he hasn't been good. He's got a 7.30 ERA. But Scott, something I brought up in our emergency podcast for Glasnow was that some of the other Tampa Bay Rays pitchers might have to step up, and they might get pushed further than they have before because they don't want to tax their bullpen as much as they have. And I think we already have seen that. Shane McClanahan throwing 89 pitches in this start. So if that's a sign of things to come, I'm pretty excited, especially with his swinging strike rate and throwing all these different pitches like he did on Tuesday. So I will expand it to not only dynasty leagues. I would be looking to buy low on Shane McClanahan everywhere. And I think you can get him for like really cheap too. I don't think it's going to cost you anything.
Yeah. I mean, in redraft leagues, he's probably borderline rostered right now because the last three starts to 7.30 ERA. Yeah. I don't know that my excitement is quite at the level of yours, but I mean, you highlighted all the positive notes in terms of what we're seeing from McClanahan right now. I just wish he was more effective. Because that's obviously a question mark for a rookie pitcher without much of a track record. So, yeah, I'll put him as like a 5 on the excitometer for me.
Oh, right, Scott. We have to go rapid fire into hyperdrive here. And let's look at some waiver wire options from Tuesday. Amed Rosario went 3-for-5 with his 7th steal. He's only 48% rostered on CBS. He has shortstop and outfield eligibility. And in 35 games since the start of May, Amed Rosario is batting .336 with 2 home runs and 7 steals. That is a 30 stolen base pace over 150 games. I really like Amed Rosario, Scott.
Well, somebody has to, right?
Oh.
There's just not a lot of power there, and I don't trust him to sustain a 30 steal pace because he's never done that before, and I know he's with a new team now, and that makes a big difference.
And that team likes to run, Scott. I think that matters.
It definitely matters, but it's still asking him to sustain peak performance for, you know, 3.5 months. I think he's probably more like a 20 to 25 steal guy with a pretty good batting average because he makes a lot of contact, hits the ball to all fields, pretty good line drive rate, but not a lot of power. And I think that's pretty fringy, only usable in like a roto league, really.
Needs to be rostered in every category league. There, I said it for Amed Rosario. Kwanghyun Kim, he was going up against the Marlins. 6 innings, 1 run, 5 walks with 6 strikeouts. I don't think Kim is very good, but he finds a way to pitch well most of the time. He's 40% rostered, and it looks like he's facing the Pirates next week, Scott. Any interest in Kwanghyun Kim?
I really don't have any interest in him, no. I don't think he's very good either, and you know, he's managed to keep the ERA below, well, it just dropped below 4 with this start, but, you know, his previous start was 3 innings. This was his first 6-inning start all year. Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of impact here.
Man, you know, the Diamondbacks are so bad. I'm sorry for any Diamondbacks fans out there.
So they've lost 26 of 28 now, right?
I saw a stat like that somewhere, which is just... Yeah. You have to try to be that bad. It's just, man.
They had a winning record in April.
They had a huge lead in this game, and I just checked back, and the Giants won. Like, Mike Yastrzemski hit a grand slam in the 8th inning to take a 1-run lead in that game, and the Diamondbacks found a way to lose. So what I wanted to bring up was Christian Walker, who went 2-for-4 with a double, actually 2-for-5. 2-for-5 with a double and 3 RBI. He's 25% rostered. He did have an .825 OPS back in 2019. And a 792 OPS last season, Scott. So any interest in Christian Walker, maybe in leagues with a corner infielder?
You know, I'm mostly just disappointed that Christian Walker is kind of interfering with Pavin Smith here. And actually not that much. Pavin Smith is kind of bouncing all over the outfield, still playing close to every day. But at this point, I have more trust in Pavin Smith than Christian Walker. Maybe the new environment that's forthcoming we'll change that. Maybe Christian Walker gets back to being a pretty useful bat in fantasy. Who knows, Frank? Who knows?
You don't know? I don't know, Scott. Let's talk about a few names in deeper leagues. Jonathan Daza of the Colorado Rockies went 3-for-5 with an RBI. He's batting .325 on the season. He doesn't really offer much else outside of batting average. He's only 11% rostered. Brett Anderson somehow threw 7 shutout with 9 strikeouts. I mean, what happened, Cincinnati Reds? Did you forget how to play baseball on Tuesday? Chris Flexen up against the Twins. This might be the biggest head scratcher of all. 8 shutout, 4 hits, 0 walks, 8 strikeouts for Chris Flexen in this start. He now has quality starts in 3 of his last 4 starts. I don't know if there's anything there, Scott, but he was really good on Tuesday.
Well, the other starts, the whiffs were terrible, but he had 15 against the Twins. Yeah, and I don't really make anything of it yet, but I don't know. It kind of reminds me of that stretch Merrill Kelly was on earlier this year, where it's just kind of one of those things, and obviously Merrill Kelly's come back down to earth. I suspect Flexen will too.
Yeah, the kind of thing, it's like playing hot potato, Scott. You don't want to be the one that's caught with...
Right, exactly.
If you started Martin Perez, I think it was last week, he was a 2-start pitcher, and he was pitching really well before that. He just got completely destroyed in 2 starts. So I'm not saying that's going to happen to Chris Flexen. He had 15 swinging strikes on 107 pitches, so put him on the scout team. That's what we usually say about guys like Chris Flexen. Tuesday, studs being studs, hitter edition. Jose Altuve went 2-for-5 with a grand slam. That's his 13th home run of the season. He is batting .290 with an .844 OPS. Pretty sure 2020 was a complete fluke for Jose Altuve. Trey Turner went 4-for-5 with a triple. He has slowed down a little bit recently, but nice little bounce back here for him. Rafael Devers went 3-for-5 with his 16th home run. He's now up to 54 RBI on the season. That is 2nd in baseball. He is on pace for 37 home runs and 126 RBI over 150 games. And he is doing that with a sub-700 OPS versus left-handed pitching. So he is absolutely destroying right-handed pitching.
His home run today was off the left-handed pitcher, albeit a weakened one, Tucker Davidson.
That's very good to see. Bo Bichette went 2-for-4 with his 14th home run. He now has 15 hits over his last 8 games, raising his batting average to .284. That was really the last piece of the 5-category production we were waiting for Bo Bichette, and it looks like it's coming around. Not sure that this guy is a stud, but he is now, Scott. Ryan McMahon had 3 hits, including a triple, and his 16th home run of the season. He now has had a 42% fly ball rate or better every month this year. So batting average has fallen off a little bit, but Ryan McMahon is someone who in the past has hit way too many ground balls. I really like the fact that he has kept up this fly ball rate consistently throughout the season.
Yeah, the fly ball rate has remained up. The strikeout rate has remained down. And those were his two biggest flaws in past years. So I don't know that the ceiling is all that high. He doesn't get on base much. The walk rate is low, which limits his potential. But, you know, Coors Field, that BABIP inflating environment, maybe if hitting becomes easier across the league, maybe McMahon gets that batting average up some. I don't know. Definitely looks like a better player this year than in the past, though.
I would agree with that. Some leftovers from Tuesday. Gary Sanchez went 2-for-5 with a double and his 9th home run. His last 15 games, he's batting .340 with 4 home runs. That also comes with a 31% strikeout rate. So some signs of life here for Gary Sanchez. He's been much better in the month of June. Eduardo Rodriguez at the Braves, 4 innings, 4 runs, 8 strikeouts. Like the strikeouts, but 17 swinging strikes on 80 pitches. He hasn't had a quality start since April 25th, Scott. So I don't know.
And his ERA is 6.98. No, 6.21. Sorry, 6.21. Now is the ERA. It's bad either way. Yeah, I don't know. Like he's kind of been the biggest underachiever in terms of looking at his xFIP and all the predictor stats like that. Clearly you can't trust him right now.
These last two items, Lance McCullers was pretty meh in his return, but I noticed the velocity on his sinker was 91.9 miles per hour. That's 93.5 miles per hour for the season. So down quite a bit there. I don't know if there's anything, but we'll pay attention to McCullers' velocity. And Yu Darvish, who he allowed 4 runs over 5 innings. He had 5 different pitches with the spin rate down at least 175 RPM. So I don't know if that matters. It might have been like a Coors Field thing in Colorado. The ball just like moves weird and different there, but I guess it's worth
mentioning.
That's true. The call to the pen, some bullpen updates. The Texas Rangers, the long-awaited anticipation, Scott, to know who is the Rangers closer without Ian Kennedy. It was Josh Spores. And then he allowed a game-tying solo home run to Carlos Correa. So I don't think he's very good, but it looks like he's going to be the closer in the meantime, as long as Kennedy is on the IL. For the Mets, Edwin Diaz had pitched three of the last 4 days, so Seth Lugo pitched the eighth and the ninth inning, and he picked up his first save of the season. Scott, I'm kind of interested in Lugo in category leagues where if you need help in saves, if you need some help with ratios, Lugo now has a 1.17 ERA with 12 strikeouts over, it's only 7 2/3 innings pitched, but we've seen Lugo be really good in the past, so.
Yeah, and oh, wait a second. So it was, did he miss all of last year with injury?
I'm not sure if it was all of last year.
So the last we saw of him, right, he had moved to the starting rotation and started out good, but then got throttled at the end.
No, yeah, he pitched as a
starter. That was just last year.
Yeah, he pitched as a starter last year. That
was
just,
okay. Yeah. Last year was so short, I get it mixed up with... Yeah, no, he's looked awesome since coming back. He's looked like the elite reliever he was in 2019 and 2018 and before moving to the bullpen in 2020. So I agree. In terms of ratios, Seth Lugo should be a pretty good bet.
For Cleveland, in a 5-run game, James Karinchak pitched in the 8th inning to face 3, 4, and 5 in the Orioles lineup. Emmanuel Clase was used in the 9th. Wasn't a save situation, but thought it was notable. The Red Sox, Matt Barnes allowed a run, but he got his 15th save. For the Tigers, Gregory Soto got his 6th save of the season. Jose Cisnero was only used once in the previous 3 days, so I guess he should have been available. Michael Fulmer pitched yesterday. It was his first game back, so maybe they're taking it easy with him. The Tigers situation is, I mean, I think it may have elevated to one of the worst in baseball just because they're a bad team, and it seems like they're using multiple relievers. For the White Sox, Liam Hendricks got his 18th save. For the Marlins, Yimi Garcia allowed a walk-off home run to Paul Goldschmidt and took his 5th loss of the season. And for the Reds, Lucas Sims pitched in the 9th in a tie game. Amir Garrett came in for the final out to face Tim Lopes, and he got his 3rd save of the season.
That was in extra innings.
Yes, it was.
If it wasn't clear.
Yep.
So Sims came in with a game tied in the 9th, pitched a scoreless innings, went to extra. Yeah. Garrett got a one-out save.
I think Sims is the guy, but there was a game recently where he came in the 6th inning randomly. I think it was like the biggest spot in the game. So whatever.
And it didn't go well.
It did not.
That was one of his worst appearances recently too.
Yeah, I think it was actually Luis Castillo's last start. And we talked about that. To stream or not to stream, we'll wrap up here with Wednesday, Tarek Skubal at the Royals, Keegan Aiken at Cleveland, Griffin Canning at Oakland, Cole Irvin versus the Angels, Brady Singer versus the Tigers, and Merrill Kelly at the Giants.
Seems like we've been talking about this pitching slate forever.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Now I'm questioning if I got it right.
Did you change this from yesterday? Did you change this in the rundown?
I thought I did.
Well, Skubal didn't go today, so he must have. Yeah, Skubal at KC is the top choice, followed by, I think I would say, Griffin Canning at Oakland, and then Brady Singer versus the Tigers.
All right, for Thursday, man, we have had some really bad slates, but this one, I think this one takes the cake. Matt Manning at the Angels in his Major League debut, Wade Miley at the Padres, John Gant, that's Cy Young contender John Gant, at the Atlanta Braves, Jorge Lopez at Cleveland, Michael King at the Blue Jays, and a bunch of TBDs, Scott. So if you want to choose those, feel free.
Oh, gosh. I'm not even going to try to pick more than one.
Yeah, I think it's only Wade Miley. That's it.
Yeah, if I have to pick a favorite, it's Wade Miley. I'm not even fully endorsing him, but he usually is pretty good at limiting damage, at least.
Yeah, hopefully by tomorrow, those TBDs turn into actual starting pitchers, so we'll have more options then. We're going to wrap up. For Scott and Frank, thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye!
Hello everyone, it's Micah Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean, outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.